Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You're listening to the Irish Farmers Journal podcast.
Hello, everyone. I'm Stephen Robb, and you're very welcome along to the Tillage Podcast. It's currently Thursday morning, 28th of October, and I have a copy of the Irish Farmers Journal newspaper in my hands. And as always, I'm joined by my colleagues, Andy Doyle and Siobhan Walsh, to run through the key tillage stories and others of the week. But before we do, as always, we're going to run around the room to see what has been happening in Ireland's tillage fields over the past 7 days. So, Siobhan, I'm going to come over to yourself here first. You've been out and about on the road this week. What have you been seeing?
Yeah, well, I suppose everything stalled yesterday with the rain, Stephen, but there was still a nice few people planting in over the weekend and trying to get things done. Before the rain came, a lot of spraying going on, and it's great. I was down in Kilkenny yesterday and plenty of crops on their way up and looking well as well. So I think in general, farmers are happy.
Andy, on your travels, what have you been seeing?
Pretty much similar. The one thing that's certainly different this week is that a lot of the crops that were sown thereabouts a fortnight ago are now up and visible and up lovely and uniformly, and it's terrific to see. Like Siobhan said, you know, people were heeding the forecast, and certainly yesterday was a very wet day in some areas and not a wet day at all in other areas. But a lot of the tillage areas in the country got caught. I'm just looking here at the Met Éireann website as I talk, and I see Cork Airport with 50 mil, Johnstown Castle 57.6, Moore Park 25.9, Roches Point 54.2. That's midnight to midnight yesterday. You know, they're big numbers. And unfortunately, they'll put paid to field work in those parts of the country for quite a number of days, assuming that there might be dry days coming, but that's not really in the forecast either.
Yeah, certainly in the northern half of things, I'm looking at the same crop network of weather stations here for the rainfall yesterday. And for a change, the north has seemed to escape the worst of it, but that's not that much good to them, to growers up there, because ground conditions are quite wet at the moment. What's going on? Well, look, majority of the zone is long since finished at this stage. Potato harvesting going on still. And it's proven to be a little bit of a challenge around the country. Actually, potato harvesting, it's been a great year for getting potatoes out in good condition. A lot of guys are now finished. Look, you get mixed reports in terms of yield. Some are saying it's a super year. Others are saying it's below average. Quality seems to be good across the board, which is nearly more important. So Andy, maybe just we'll stick with that for a second. Like conditions this autumn have been fantastic, really across the board, for getting crops in good condition. And generally what we see in autumns like that is that we see a winter crop area increase. Do you think we're going to see that trend this year?
Stephen, I was asking around last week as to what people thought was going to happen. There's a feeling that there may be a small increase in winter area relative to last year, probably more likely in barley than in wheat to date. Oats at least maintaining or possibly slightly up. But I think an awful lot of the final measurement of that will depend on what will happen when the potatoes, the maize and the beet come out. Will there be an opportunity to plant following those crops? And most of that's not done yet, so it's to play for. Up to now, we would have seen relatively low overall rainfalls in most of the tillage areas for a lot of the eastern side of the country. Therefore, land was relatively dry and it would soak up pretty quickly. After the rainfall amounts that we've had yesterday and the rainfall amounts that are likely to happen today, that would be less likely, at least in the short term. In the medium term, who knows, it might pick up again. But for the moment, I think that a lot of the opportunity to plant is probably going to be taken away from a lot of people, but not everybody. And this is where you have to be ready to take your opportunity.
Do you think are guys consciously holding back on increasing winter area this year in light of, I suppose, rising input costs for next year?
It's not something that I'm detecting in conversation. And I think, unfortunately, one of the main reasons for that is that I think people aren't fully tuned into the consequence of these inevitable costs that seem to be coming down the road. And therefore, they're kind of not doing that some yet. But it's probably slightly more possible to save on your usual fertilizer inputs on winter grain than it is actually on spring grain. And therefore, you know, opting for spring over winter might not be the solution. But I think that if people are seriously looking at what they should be doing for the year ahead, I think reducing overall fertilizer rates will be part of that. And bringing in a little bit of leguminous crop or an amount of leguminous crop into the rotation could be another part of it, because it just means that you have a chunk of acres that you don't need nitrogen on, which makes it a little bit more affordable to have that to bring up rates across other crops, if that's what you choose to do.
Yeah, we might just touch on that in a second again, Andy, but first I'm going to go across to Siobhan here. Siobhan, you have a short piece in this week's paper on fertiliser prices and markets, and indeed there's no signs of things calming down, is there?
No, there's not. And like, we've heard a lot about natural gas and how natural gas was driving some of the nitrogen costs, but I suppose the situation is now, you know, stocks need to be built over winter, and with plant shutdowns and that, there's a disruption in the supply chain. So, you know, there's definitely going to be high fertilizer prices, we could nearly say, in the springtime, wherever they'll be. We can't say for sure. At the minute, like urea is at about 850, CAN is about 600, but I'd say that's, you know, probably prices from last week. This week, if you go to a merchant, you'll find it very hard to get a price. A lot of merchants and co-ops have stopped quoting prices to farmers. And I suppose they're warning as well that, you know, farmers need to gear up to get finance to buy that fertilizer, because they're not going to offer extended merchant credit next season. And in fairness, that's going to be, it would be a very hard thing for them to do. You know, where we saw fertilizer at 185 this time last year, or CAN at 185 this time last year, and CAN at 600 now. You know, I suppose it's going to be a payment up front that people are going to have to give.
Yeah, I mean, that has big implications for just general farm management, because a lot of guys mightn't be relying on any real degree of merchant credit, you know, particularly the smaller guys. So that would, yeah, that's the first I would have heard that changed things potentially quite a bit for next year.
Yeah, it's a big thing, and look, it's worrying, but look, as Andy was talking about, there's room now over winter to plan your crops and decide, you know, maybe put in a few acres extra of beans or whatever it may be, you know, start to think now about a plan and ways to reduce your costs.
Well, I suppose, Andy, just on that, I mean, are guys legitimately thinking about taking a P&K holiday this year?
It's the natural reaction that a lot of people take in this type of situation, Stephen. We've been there before. We've seen grain prices rise and fertilizer prices rise, and then grain prices come down and fertilizer prices stay up. And in that situation, it's maybe an understandable reaction. But I'm not so sure that it is the right thing to be doing, because We all know how fragile high grain prices are, and sooner or later, unfortunately, they come down again significantly. And if that happens in a scenario where we still have high fertilizer prices, maybe not as high as they are today, but if they're considerably higher, and you've taken 1 or 2 years of P&K holiday, getting the thing back on course again could cost a lot of money. I would much prefer to be kind of looking at the approach of putting on a lesser amount for sure to try and offset the cost, but have some there, because we don't know where the overall situation is going to be in 3 years' time, and that's always a worry.
Yes, you could really end up shooting yourself in the foot, thinking that it's only going to be a 1 year blip as such. And also for the fact that the winter crops have got off to such a good start this year. You know, there's been good, vigorous growth. The crops are hopefully going to be all there coming into the spring next year. It was surely all that biomass is going to have to be fed.
Yeah, well, look, we said some weeks ago that one of the consequences of having warm soil and then rain on top of it was that you were inevitably going to see a further and late release of nitrogen. I think a lot of people out there with vegetation on stubbles and or catch crops will vouch that that has happened. You know, they're really bombing on. So there is fertility in the ground for winter crops to grab and catch. And hopefully they will succeed in doing that. But I think with winter cereals, it's less useful to the growing crop for next year. There's less potential to save on inputs for next year just on the quantity that has been taken up this year. We have this conversation fairly frequently, and it generally means a little bit less forced in and maybe a very much delayed forced in if you can see your crops still nice and green and lush. But it doesn't give as much scope to save on grain as it would on rape.
Okay. And I suppose, Andy, just where are soil temperatures at? Is there any, I know last week we thought that they were going to reduce considerably by this time this week, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
Stephen, they decreased very considerably over the weekend, and we were down kind of to 10s and 11s on Monday compared with 40 and 50 in last week. But again, as I'm talking to you, I'm looking here and I'm seeing temperatures in the order of 13s in the main. Indeed, virtually all of them were in their 13s yesterday, with the exception of the northeast corner. All the others were 13s and into 14. So they've bounced back up again, which was kind of a little bit surprising. That's a couple of degrees up in 2 days. They move around a bit more than I had expected that they would.
Okay. And there we're going to have to move on. Siobhan, in this week's paper, you have a new story on Bord Bia. Bord Bia have changed their stance on imported soya. Just explain to us what this is and what it means.
Yeah, so in the last few weeks, farmers have probably noticed, or listeners have probably noticed that in the paper, there's a lot of talk about carbon footprints, and Bord Bia and Chagas Signposts are doing a lot of information evenings and webinars on it. And part of it is Bord Bia have made some changes to their carbon footprint, to their sustainability audit, which ultimately gives beef and dairy farmers their carbon footprint. And one of the changes to that audit is that they're now treating soy differently. So if a farmer is feeding soy on their farm, their greenhouse gas emissions are going to go up. But interestingly, I suppose this has been, you know, tillage farmers are always talking about imported feed, and it's been something that's talked about for a while. So interestingly, Bord Bia said on the Chagas webinar last week they're adding greenhouse gas emissions for soy, but they're not all barley and wheat is treated as Irish in the audit, and there was no mention of maize. So we import well over 1 million tons of maize each year. We import barley and wheat from the UK and around Europe, and you know, there's a couple of 100,000 tons of those grains imported. And look, as a nation and a tillage sector, we can't feed all the animals in Ireland, but I think, you know, in that audit, it'd be nice if there was recognition of Irish grain. And, you know, there is possibly a market for Irish fed animals as opposed to grass fed animals. So it, I suppose it's progress that Sai has been changed, and maybe this is a sign of things to come, that the rest of the rations will be taken into account, because there are farmers out there who are consciously asking their merchant or their co-op for an Irish ration and supporting Irish tillage farmers on their farms. And it would be nice if those farmers were recognised to do that. And indeed, there's loads of farmers, you know, buying maize or beet off Irish farmers as well. And it'd be nice to see that reflected in the carbon footprints.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real sore point for tillage farmers. But I mean, the question is, why did they stop at soya?
I know. Yeah. So basically, they said when the SDAS or when the sustainability audit was set up, that they had to think of time. And basically, it sounds like it'd be too complicated to work out the carbon footprint of a ration. So they see soy, I suppose, as something that's associated with the deforestation of rainforests. And but like, I mean, the majority of our maize crosses from the Atlantic Ocean. A lot of it comes from Canada. Some of it will come from South America, maybe. But I suppose they chose the ingredient that they saw would maybe have the biggest impact on greenhouse gas emissions. But, you know, is that really good enough to stop at that then and to ignore the rest of it? I don't think so.
Yeah. Nor do I, Siobhan, for what it's worth. But it's probably also worth saying that it's being introduced now after the soya industry has made some move to begin to cater for its own footprint. So the soya industry has been working on soy footprints from different destinations, and they probably will be part of what Bordia will be taking on board. So it may not be just as black and white as that soya would be have a certain carbon footprint. It may very well be that different destinations and that only destinations of those low footprints might find their way into this market. Time will tell.
Yeah, and we covered that on the paper, I suppose, a few months ago now, I suppose, the sustainable soy. And there's people, you know, retailers are consciously looking for sustainable soy. And I suppose at the minute, it's mainly in the poultry or the monogastric sectors, but it will be moving to ruminants. I mean, that's the trend and where it's going. So look, more work to be done, definitely.
Yes, it's certainly not going to be the last time we hear about sustainable feedstock for the livestock sector.
No, definitely not, Stephen, no. And I suppose when we're on sustainability, and I know we're talking about anaerobic digestion a lot lately, but you have a piece on anaerobic digestion on the sustainability page this week.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the sustainability of feedstocks, it's not only a livestock issue. It has certainly been asked of a proposed anaerobic digestion industry in Ireland. How sustainable would it be? And it really does center around the feedstock, and it centers around the use of nutrients. So in this week's sustainability pages, we have a report on a KPMG and Devenish report, which was published this week, commissioned by Gas Networks Ireland, pretty much trying to address some of the key issues that some of the doubters might have on anaerobic digestion as such. So look, AD, we've talked about it a lot in the past, that it's widespread across Europe. So it is produces renewable electricity, renewable gas for heat and transport, produces our homogenized organic fertilizer, reduces agricultural and energy related emissions, and literally complies with 12 Irish and EU policy objectives. But as I said in this week's paper, not everyone is convinced, and there is concerns that the development of an AD industry could lead to the intensification of agriculture to produce more feedstock, and then as a result, really the unintended consequences on biodiversity, on water quality, on nitrates, nutrients, so on and so forth. So I suppose the report really looks at a number of elements, and we've only been able to report on a fraction of it as such because it's so large and detailed. I suppose the first one is can we produce the feedstock produced required to fuel an AD industry? So they look at a theoretical industry of around 125 AD plants right around the country, which will produce around 2.5 terawatt hours of biomethane. Pretty much they're saying that you would need the equivalent of 50,000 hectares worth of agricultural land to produce grass to feed these plants, and as well as that, another 1.75 million tons of slurry. But they've what they've done is they've looked at how we could optimize, we'll say, existing grassland systems, primarily beef, and increase the average grass growth on what would be considered below average farms as such, to bring it up to a new average as such. And what I mean by that is, I think Chagas's figure for the average grass growth of beef farms is around 6 tonne of dry matter per hectare. This report is saying that they would be confident that you could increase that to 10 tonne of dry matter per hectare. You know, and if you do that across a large enough area, then you'd more than comfortably meet some 0.6 million tonnes of dry matter required to feed these plants. So they're pretty much saying it's kind of addressing the competition issue as well, which Pat McCormick highlighted on Irish Farmers Journal's Leaders Debate a couple of weeks ago, that they're pretty much afraid AD plants will compete with the dairy industry as such, but they're saying that it can be done in harmony with it as such. And then I suppose the other issue was, you know, can this be done sustainably? And look, to be fair, the report is pretty honest, so it is. They're saying that in order to produce this, you're going to have to optimise soil fertility. And to do that, it likely will require more inputs to begin with. You know, you'd be going on a P&K kind of building programme as such, and obviously the use of lime to optimise fertility, and who knows, possibly even draining if needs be. But they're saying once you get there, you know, whatever course of years, 5-6 years, then really you're at maintenance level. And a lot of this could be met with, a lot of the nutrients required could be met with digestate or upgraded digestate from these plants. So it's a real circular model as such. And then, of course, the another point issued addressed in the report is, what does this actually mean from a carbon savings point of view? So it's something I touched on the past before, but like the how gas is produced, how renewable gas is produced is completely different to how it was produced 2 years ago, because there's new strict sustainability criteria under the Renewable Energy Directive, which applies to all biogas plants now, new biogas plants. So basically, long story short, it means that at the end of the day, your gas that you produce, your biogas, your biomethane, it has to reduce emissions by 70% compared to natural gas. Doesn't meet that, it's not renewable, and you're not going to get paid your renewable premium. And that takes into account everything throughout the supply chain, from feedstock production to the efficiency of your plant to the gas tightness of your plant. And if you like, that's your guarantee that your gas is renewable. They're saying by developing these 125 AD plants, feeding it with agricultural feedstock and waste slurry, you know, you deliver a carbon dioxide equivalent saving of over 500,000 tonnes per annum, which is pretty substantial in my book.
Absolutely, Stephen, yeah. And with the prices we were talking about on fertiliser earlier on as well, look, we've said it in the last few weeks, it's something that needs consideration anyway in some of the policies.
Yeah, so certainly, you know, and in any of the modern plants, the modern systems, you know, they're going to go beyond just producing digestate. So what goes in, what goes out, they're going to take that digestate and they're going to upgrade it, you know, and they're probably going to remove a lot of the moisture, a lot of the water, and make a much more concentrated product. So in a sense, it's an upgraded biofertilizer with in a more dense nutrient content as such, mm-hmm. which would be comparable with perhaps, you know, a mineral alternative as such. So, you know, that's all ahead of us, so it is. But I think the report was important to highlight just, you know, how AD fits into the system, into the Irish system pretty much.
Absolutely, yeah.
So look, moving on, time is ticking on here. Siobhan, you have another piece in this week just on eco schemes, proposed eco schemes, and one of the proposals under, or one of the measures under the proposed eco schemes is GPS fertilizer spreaders. There's been calls to change that to a GPS navigation system. Just explain to us what this is about and why are they calling for it?
Yeah, I suppose, look, with the new cap, the worry is, and especially in the tillage sector, I suppose, convergence is going to hit us hard, and the eco schemes is one of the ways to get some of your money back. And I suppose at the minute, it's, you know, there's five eco schemes proposed, and it's does a farmer want to plant 900 trees on their farm, or what, you know, it, depending on your area or whatever, you're limited in your options on how to get that money back. And one of the proposed eco schemes is that you use a GPS fertilizer spreader on your farm. And Ivan Whitney, he's a Chagas advisor, a tillage Chagas advisor in Kildare. And he said this week, he said to the Farmers Journal that he'd like to see that eco scheme changed so that farmers who are using a GPS guidance system would qualify for that eco scheme. And look, I suppose a GPS fertilizer spreader can be extremely expensive. Like if you're, you know, bottom end of the scale, you're at 22,000, and you can go way up that scale. A guidance system, which a lot of farmers would already have, you know, you can get from about €1,500 or even a bit less. Or there's loads of secondhand ones on the market as well. And I suppose basically what Ivan is saying is that, you know, if you're using a guidance system, you're driving more accurately. You should have less overlaps. And by reducing overlaps and spreading in the right areas of the field, you should reduce your fertilizer spreading. And I suppose it would be available to a lot more farmers than if they were using the GPS fertilizer spreader, and then possibly lead to an overall a bigger reduction in I suppose in overuse of fertilizer because of the access to more farmers. And what Ivan said was, look, he's worried about the impact of CAP on the small to medium sized tillage farms, and he said those farmers are, you know, they're farming to get as much profit as they can from every acre, and you know, they want to get some of that CAP payment back, and this is a way that they can get some of that money back, but that we can also see a positive impact on the environment and a reduced use of fertilizer.
Yeah, because basically it means that by and large, a navigation system would apply to livestock grassland farmers as well.
Yeah, like if you think of, you know, the average size farm is what, 32 hectares in the last CSO. And, you know, those farms aren't going to have a GPS fertilizer spread on those farms is going to be, it's not going to be a very easy option for farmers to take, but the guidance system is an easier option to take. And, you know, it could have an impact on thousands upon thousands of farms across the country, rather than the small few who'll be able to afford the GPS fertilizer spreader. And the aim is, you know, our aim in Ag Climatize is to reduce our fertilizer use. And this is one way we can do it. I mean, there's loads of farmers out there who are, you know, they're not marking their fields when they're driving with their fertilizer spreader, or their tram lines are in the wrong place. And little things on GPS can have a big difference to your overall use of fertilizer.
Okay, one to watch. It sounds like a practical approach. So it does. Okay, so Andy, markets once again. There has been movement over the past 7 days.
Yes, indeed, Stephen. You know, I think as we kind of hinted last week, there's yet more factors coming into the market, particularly in the short term. Longer term is kind of less scope to be mad bullish, but there's it's more difficult to get grain transported, to get it into the country, and it's a lot more expensive to do that. And as a consequence, we're seeing futures rising, and we're also seeing physical prices rising. And they're kind of getting to the stage where you begin to wonder at some point, or I would begin to wonder, are they massively overheated in terms of where they will go long term? But, you know, we're gone from kind of the 275 to the 280 plus this week. And I would say that, you know, you're probably going to be looking at more on that next week. But as I look kind of way down the road, we quickly end up with our grain prices being potentially higher than imported maize. And we know where the consequence of that goes in the medium term. So we, like, there is an issue here where they may overheat. And it's something that we have to be concerned about, not necessarily worried about, but concerned about. And there's a lot to be said for people just continuing to sell a bit at the price on the day to supply a market, because if we don't supply it, imports will have taken the market away.
Okay, and I suppose for anyone who maybe hasn't been following markets that intensely over the past year or so, you have a nice summary on page 48 and 49 of this week's Farmers Journal.
Yes, there's a feed supplement there, as in not so much winter feed as a concentrate feed supplement, which I just put in a background to what has happened in the markets, what the drivers were, what drove up the price of maize, what drove up the price of soya, etc., and where they are relative to a year ago. And, you know, well, relative to 18 months ago in particular. You're looking there at a maize price increase coming into Irish ports at something close to 80 euro a ton. So, you know, that fairly matters in terms of what the cost of those type of rations would be.
Okay. Guys, time is ticking on here, so we're going to have to move on. I suppose for everyone listening, that really was just a flavour of what's in this week's newspaper. You know, we have a super article in from Chagas on blackgrass control and control options. We have an update on the Farmer for Nature Awards, which our very own from the Tramline farmer, Norman Dunn, and his father won over the weekend. And of course, we have a major KPMG Farmers Journal commissioned report on the economic impact of the government's GHG reduction proposals, which really is essential reading. So I would certainly recommend picking up a copy of this week's paper whenever you get a chance today. So Andy, looking at the week ahead, what do we have in store weather-wise, and is there likely to be much field work going on?
Well, Stephen, I'm looking at the radar map on Metairn just as I'm talking to you, and considering where the big volumes of rain fell yesterday and what's happening today, certainly an awful lot of the East Coast is going to be not very busy in the fields for a couple of days, it would look like. Looking at the forecast that's there, I think maybe somewhat different to other weeks, you may get something close to the better of the weather in the northwest, but I still wouldn't like to say that you can guarantee that, because there, a bit south of you across the west, there's a lot of rain in the forecast for over the weekend, and very few zeros on the charts this week. But across the east, there's kind of zeros, ones and twos, which if land wasn't very wet, it might just enable people to keep going. But it just depends on how much rain has fallen in your given area now, because the rain that has been crossing the country yesterday and today, it's falling in bursts. And while everybody has had a wet day, local areas have got very different amounts of rainfall. So it just literally will depend on that. But the one thing that is noticeable in the forecast for the coming week is that after the weekend, we're going to look at a very significant drop in temperatures again. Kind of going back to tens during the day and down to threes at night as we get into next week. So that wouldn't be long kind of taking the growth off the crops that we're seeing at the moment.
Okay. Look, we've heard worse forecasts. So from there, we're going to have to leave it. So from Andy, Siobhan and myself, Stephen Robb, thank you all very much for listening. And until next week, stay safe, stay tillage farming.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.